A new Marquette University Law School poll is out. We're getting takeaways here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This one surveys everything from sentiment on the House's impeachment inquiry to the presidential election. How is the House's inquiry affecting President Trump's job rating here in Wisconsin? One of the things we're going to explore with you at 800-642-1234. Charles Franklin is director of the Marquette University Law School Poll and a professor of law and public policies, co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsandVotes.com. Charles, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good to be here.
Well, let's start there with this declining support for impeaching President Trump among the registered Wisconsin voters you talked to last week. What did your numbers tell you?
Right. Well, in October, we found that 44% favored impeachment and removal from office. 51% opposed it. This time, it's 40% in favor, 53% opposed. So support down 4, opposition up 2. Most of that movement comes from Republicans who are rallying around the president. Among Republicans, movement against impeachment went up by between 2 and 4%. Democrats, though, also became a little less in favor of impeachment. So on the one hand, normal polarization means that partisans come home to their party, and we're certainly seeing that with the Republican side. On the Democratic side, though, it slipped down just a little bit. Some of that may be the shuffling of Democratic positions. When we asked about impeachment back in April during the Mueller investigation and when Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, was opposed to moving ahead with investigations, Democratic support was quite low. It really zoomed up after Pelosi embraced the impeachment investigation early in the fall. And so now that Democratic support is slipped down 2 to 4 points. I think the other thing to remember is we started interviewing last Wednesday,
which was the first
day of public testimony. Yeah. Of course, there'd been lots of non-public information. And this week we've had already some substantial testimony. So I think we're still early in the game of what people know and what they've heard from the investigation and the public testimony.
You also looked at how closely people are paying attention to these hearings and how that's affected their views on the evidence that's being put forth. Where do you see differences, discrepancies?
Sure. Well, first of all, attention, about a third say they're following very closely, a third pretty closely, and then a third either not too closely or not at all closely. The biggest thing that you see that just pops out is the less you follow, the more you simply say, I don't know. Uh-huh. I don't know what happened. I don't know if he should be impeached. To the point that those who are following least closely, over 50%, say they don't have an opinion about either the evidence or whether he should be impeached or not. Of those following very closely, a majority, 51%, favor impeachment and removal. And then it drops to 41% in the next level of attention and then to 33% and finally 25% for the lowest level. But most of that movement is going into the don't knows. Mm-hmm. Also, it's worth noting that Democrats and Republicans are following about equally closely. So these differences in support for impeachment are not because it's mostly Democrats following closely and Republicans not. Both groups are following closely. So this is an effect of how much you pay attention and what the evidence you're seeing convinces you to believe.
Talking with Professor Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll, you can join in, have the impeachment inquiry hearings changed where you position yourself on President Trump. What do you think of how the president has been handling foreign matters? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Charles, let's look at the 2020 presidential race. Overall, who is emerging as the front runner among the voters you polled on Democrats?
For the Democratic primary, Joe Biden remains in the top spot at 30%. He was at 31 last month, so barely any change there. Bernie Sanders had fallen to third place last month, is back in second this month. But he was at 17% both times, so he hasn't really moved either way. It's Elizabeth Warren who's had the most movement. She had come up into second place last month at 24%, but has now fallen to 15, down 9 points from last month's second place position. And finally, Pete Buttigieg is in fourth place at 13. That's up 6 from where he was last month. So the top four is the same top four, but a little bit of bouncing around in who's in second and who's in third. The margin of error is fairly large for this group, and it's worth pointing that out, that because this is only people who are going to vote in the Democratic primary. It's not everybody. Further back, you fall all the way down into single digits, where Cory Booker and Amy Klobuchar are both at 3%. That's up a couple for Booker and stable for Klobuchar.
So here we've had a presidential debate last night, Democratic presidential primary debate. We've had more previous of those who say they'll vote in the Democratic primary. Do we have indication from your polling how much these debates matter?
Yeah, I don't think we've seen much debate impact with the possible exception of the first debate. That was where Kamala Harris had a pretty successful night in terms of debating and confronting Joe Biden. In national polling during that time, we saw that Biden's support slipped right after that debate and Harris's boomed up quite a bit. But Harris then went into a long period of decline that has not been interrupted and now puts her well out of the top four, whereas Biden, after an initial decline, came back up. We've actually seen Biden go through a couple of cycles of decline, then he comes back up, then he declines and comes back up. The one that has stood out is Elizabeth Warren, who has steadily risen across all of the debates. The bottom line is, except for that first one, nobody got the kind of classic post-debate bump. And so the second through the fourth debates haven't seen that. Last night's fifth debate we'll find out about in the next week or so of polling if it helped anybody or not. I would point out that historically, we've often seen movement in both parties' presidential races coming about a month or so before the Iowa caucus.
Okay.
So that's typically been in late November, December, when the caucus was in early January. This year it's in February. So I think we might expect to see a lot of movement after Christmas if it's
January.
Coming the month before the event rather than necessarily in November or even December.
We are breaking down the new Marquette University Law School poll. Came out yesterday with its poll director Charles Franklin as our guide. Has the House's impeachment inquiry and the public hearings changed where you stand on President Trump's performance in office? What are your thoughts on where the economy is headed? When you hear these poll results, do you find that you are in these results somewhere, that you are represented in what you're hearing? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a moment with Charles Franklin here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the new Marquette Law School poll here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It shows support for impeaching President Trump has fallen in Wisconsin. And for the first time, President Trump has moved ahead of all four Democratic rivals in potential matchup scenarios. And that poll was taken last Wednesday through Sunday. during the first week as we learned of public hearings in the House's impeachment inquiry. So does your opinion align with the poll results? What is the most surprising shift among people in your circles when you talk about the impeachment inquiry, when you talk about the 2020 presidential election? Join in your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Marquette poll director and law professor Charles Franklin stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Steve is joining us from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Yes, I'm one of those Democrats who would just wish they would give up the impeachment. I think it's a waste of time, and it's losing the Democrats' vote. And also, they should be the Democrats should be paying more attention to the issues that people really care about, like health insurance. So my question is, does the poll make any differentiation between people like me who thinks it's a waste of time or just Democrats in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that was the debate that was happening within the House of Representatives, with Nancy Pelosi thinking that impeachment would be a distraction. It also does seem, and our data supports this, it provides a focal point for Republicans to rally around President Trump. And so there is that aspect of the political strategy of it. I also agree that the issues that we saw were very important in 2018, like access for people with pre-existing conditions to health care, were important issues, and they moved a lot of voters. Impeachment sort of sucks all of the oxygen out of those arguments. You know, so last night was the Democratic debate, but so much was happening in Washington yesterday, I doubt that it gets comparable coverage to what it would normally get.
Those kitchen table conversations get sidelined.
Exactly. And assuming that the House votes for impeachment and the Senate trial takes place, that will likely stretch into January, maybe February, conceivably later, depending on when the House acts. So that is a real concern for Democrats. To answer your question, the poll does ask whether you believe the president asked for an investigation, whether he withheld money for that investigation to pressure Ukraine. And so those are things that people can agree on facts, but still not come to the conclusion that impeachment is a good idea.
Let's go to Nancy now in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. My feeling about polls is somewhat negative, especially when the final candidates have been finally selected. And my feeling comes about by the fact that many people will vote according to the poll. They don't take the time to find out what these candidates, who these candidates are and what they stand for and what they believe in. Instead, they listen to a poll and they want to be on the winning side, so they'll vote for the person who's first in the poll without really knowing what that person is really all about. And I'd also like to make an additional comment about the fact that I find it very interesting that because Mike Pence's name has been brought into these issues, wouldn't it be interesting if Trump and Pence are both removed from office and Nancy Pelosi turns out to be the president of the United States?
Well, Nancy, thanks for the call, Charles Franklin.
Yeah, I think that this is a common concern that people just want to vote for the winner. I think the empirical evidence is that the candidate that the polls show leading doesn't do systematically better if they're leading by more than if they're leading by less. So if people really were motivated just to vote for a winner, you would think that people with substantial margins going into the race would typically win by more than the polls said. In fact, they win on average by just about what the polls show.
We're talking with Charles Franklin. He directs the Marquette University Law School poll. He's a professor of law and public policy. You can join in with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Sarah now, joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning. You know, I have kind of a different take. I actually voted for Trump. It was my first Republican I actually ever voted for. I think Wisconsin's an interesting state because normally people will say, well, I voted Republican because my parents did, or I voted Democrat I think that we are focusing too much, A, on polls. I think we saw that Hillary was pretty high in the polls when it came time to win, and we saw how that worked out, right? And two, there's more than just impeachment. I am a nurse. My husband works in a business field. We're upper middle class income. The tax increase and the tax changes really ripped us off. Just about everybody I know that voted for Trump last election is not this time. We lost about $50,000 in taxes that we pay, that we have out of our checks, and we paid an additional $12,000 in when we usually would get back 10 or 11 because my husband was able to claim business expenses, and Trump took that away. The only people that can claim that are people that own the businesses. So everything that he was able to claim, we lost, and we lost a lot of money under him. And I think there's a lot of people that are saying, forget the impeachment. He's running this country like a business. You scratch my back, I scratch yours.
I have to jump in here, Sarah. Thank you for the call. And Charles Franklin, you know, taxes, a big issue there with this particular voter, Sarah.
Absolutely. And in fact, as I understand it, while the tax bill on average may have shifted taxes down some, people like Sarah's situation where business expenses are an important part of your tax plan, and that includes not high-income folks either. It includes small business people like truck drivers that own their truck that could, in the past, deduct some of that, claim some of those expenses. So that's an example of an issue that can play a role that has nothing to do with impeachment and so on. And the question is, as we come into 2020 in the fall, what are the issues that whoever the Democratic nominee is, what issues will they emphasize in running against President Trump? And will it be things coming out of impeachment, or will they in fact have shifted to things that are more substantive of the kind of tax policies that Sarah's talking about, or health insurance, health coverage, and so on. So I think there's real interest in this. Also, Sarah, I can say that every national reporter wants to talk to you, a Trump voter who's changed their mind.
Charles Franklin, let's shift to the economy here. The last two polls you conducted in August and October, this time people generally think things are looking up for the economy. What do you make of those numbers?
Yeah, things are a little bit better. In terms of looking to the past, have things improved over the last 12 months? It's just a point more positive, so not much move there. But looking to the future, our polling this year has been relatively pessimistic about whether the economy will get better or worse or stay the same over the next year. And there we saw a blip up by 10 points from a net negative in October to now 35% think it'll get better, 24% worse, 37 stayed the same. For the year, we are still a little bit net negative on average, and we're definitely down from the high optimism we saw in 2018, and even that was a little bit higher than 2017. Still, this month is better. That may have to do with the stock market breaking some records, though it's important to point out that unemployment in Wisconsin has been ticking up by a tenth of a point in several of the last 6 months. So that is something that bears watching. Our unemployment is still at an unusually low level, but we do seem to be moving in the wrong direction on that over the last 6 months.
Well, in our last minute and change here, let's look at state government. Between October and November, opinions on how Governor Evers is doing his job have changed. What did the poll find?
Yeah, Evers' job approval has dropped a bit. It's now 47-42, a net plus 5. But it was 52-34 in October, a net plus 18. So a real drop-off there for him. He'd been a plus 20 in August. So that's a real caution, I think. Still positive, as Bear's saying. The Republicans in the legislature still are positive as well, but they also went down a bit to 48-39. And so there are some changes in how we view the leadership.
And that's in how people look at the job of the legislature, how it's doing?
Yes. It's okay. How is the Wisconsin legislature handling its job?
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Always good to be here.
Charles Franklin is director of the Marquette University Law School Poll, professor of law and public policy. Coming up, filling out your taxes is supposed to be free, but ProPublica investigations found that taxpayers are charged for services that are supposed to be free. So do you use tax software? How much does it cost? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll take a look at the tax filing software industry and the IRS right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A note about our coverage plans today. The public hearings of the House impeachment inquiry into President Trump continue this morning. And you can hear live coverage on WPR. We're carrying it on our NPR News and Classical Music Network starting at 8. Former National Security Council official Fiona Hill is set to testify. That is live coverage of the hearings in 25 minutes from now on the NPR News and Classical Music Network and online at WPR.org. So right now, though, we're talking about a program between the IRS and tax preparation companies that is under scrutiny. Companies like Intuit, the maker of TurboTax, they offer free tax filing software to low and middle income taxpayers. And this free file program has been under the magnifying glass by investigative news outlet ProPublica for months now. They found less than 3% of eligible Americans are using the free file program, and there's mounting pressure to change that from Democratic senators for the IRS to create its own software. So how do you do your taxes? Do you use TurboTax or another product? Do you pay for tax prep online? We're at 800-642-1234. Paul Keel is a reporter at ProPublica covering business and consumer finance, and his current focus is on the IRS and American Tax Administration. Paul, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So in your reporting, you found that the company that owns TurboTax, Intuit, has intentionally been restricting people's, taxpayers' access to this IRS free file program. What's going on?
Well, so we have a system where it is very difficult to file for taxes, and that is the basis of TurboTax's appeal to its customer base, that this is difficult, we're going to sort it out for you, make it easier. And, you know, TurboTax goes back to the 1990s, really, when, you know, it was like desktop sort of software, and over time it became more online-based. But the whole premise is that this is difficult, and therefore you need us. And so the company from the beginning realized that, you know, if the government were to make things easier, that would be bad for business. And so back to the 90s, they've been very active on Capitol Hill, making the case that you don't want the government involved in tax filing. We're already doing that quite well. And
we know the software. You know, is that the,
right? And part of the narrative is that the government is incompetent, or there's also this narrative that the IRS would somehow be tricking people into paying more taxes than they owe. And so all of this sort of messaging has been, you know, helpful to them because they view the government as competition.
How many Americans use a product like TurboTax?
So that it's been growing and growing. So about half of Americans go to some sort of tax preparer, like a paid tax preparer, whether that be a CPA or someplace on the corner. And then the other half go to use, you know, software more or less like TurboTax. And TurboTax has about 70% of that market. So they really dominate that market. And that's one reason why they are such a, you know, an influential voice on this issue.
And so this free file program is supposed to help people who make less than $66,000 a year file their taxes for free. Do people take advantage of this free file program?
Yeah, so not many people do. So under 3 million people use it every year. And that's simply because people don't know about it. There's sort of a secret door you have to find. You have to go to this one page in the IRS website, and then that'll send you to, you know, TurboTax or some other tax preparer's special page they have for this government program. And so what we really wanted to do in our more recent story was sort of step back and say, why are we doing this like this? And it really goes back to the Bush administration. The Bush administration came in, 2001, and they had all these ideas for how are we going to use the internet to make the government, serve citizens better. And this one idea that was on the table was to have the government get more involved in electronic tax filing. There was kind of an antiquated program that people use the telephone to file for taxes. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we can do this online, just have like a web page that does the same thing. Intuit immediately saw that as a threat and kind of went, to war, got people in Congress worked up about it. And, we talked to IRS officials at the time, and they, basically had the understanding if the IRS were to take steps to build something for people to file, they would see their funding cut, essentially. And so what came out of that was this public-private partnership, this free file program that you mentioned. So the idea is that the tax prep programs, tax prep companies like Intuit or H&R Block has one as well, they will give free tax prep to people under a certain income threshold. And in return for that, the IRS will say, no, we're not going to build anything. We're not going to compete with you. And that's
so
sort of the deal that was struck.
So it's a non-compete clause, essentially.
Basically, yeah. Yes, that's why TurboTax or Intuit likes it. That's why it's very useful to them to have this, because it's insurance to them and to their shareholders that the government is not going to get involved and compete with them.
So this type of deal has been going on then for years between the IRS and the tax filing software industry, that as long as the IRS kind of hands over this piece of it, that everything will be okay?
Yeah, it was kind of hailed as a genius, kind of solution that wouldn't cost the government anything. And what we detail in the piece is that it actually in the early years was reasonably successful. And one reason was that there was a smaller company called TaxAct that, was trying to get market share from TurboTax. So they wanted more people to use their product, but a lot of people didn't know about it. They didn't have, the advertising dollars that TurboTax did. And so what they did was back then, probably more people were going to IRS.gov to figure out how to file their taxes. And so they said, well, what if we use this program to just offer free filing to literally everybody? And it was because all the other companies were kind of narrowing their offers in some way, like you had to be, under a certain income level. But they're like, hey, everybody, we'll do your taxes for free. And they had it was very appealing to people and then the other companies saw that TaxAct was getting more customers. And so, TurboTax and H&R Block, opened up that offer as well. But Intuit didn't want to be offering free tax filing to everybody. And so they went to the IRS, they went to Congress. And essentially what happened was this deal was changed so that you had to be under a certain income level, and it prevented other companies from offering free filing to everybody. And after that, you can see usage of this program started to decline and kind of, became this sort of sleepy secret that not many people know about, which is, allowed Intuit to brag about, what is this great thing we're doing, offering free tax filing to people, while at the same time not actually having to give, free filing to a lot of people.
Talking with Paul Keel, a reporter at ProPublica covering business and consumer finance, we're looking at the free file program and this agreement between the IRS and the tax filing software industry. Do you think our current tax filing system works, or do you think it needs to change? What would you change about it? What would make it easier for you to file your taxes? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call now. Kevin is joining us from Keeler. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. My comment would be this, considering what I've just learned and have heard from your expert, that less than 1% of the country would use this back door, secret door finding to do their taxes. I would encourage everyone to find an independent tax expert. In this day and age where we have spyware, digital spyware, we're concerned about losing our passwords, we're concerned about losing our credit card numbers. It just seems ridiculous to me to offer anyone that can have possibly access to that your entire financial situation. My next comment would be as aggressive as you possibly can be with your tax return. That sends the message to Washington that people are aware and we're tired of this gridlock fighting in between. We're tired of the tax law and the tax code, which, from my understanding, even the best tax professionals don't understand because it's
complicated. Yeah. Kevin, thanks for the call. And I want to pause right there with Kevin. Paul, you know, one of the things he says, you know, go find, you know, an independent person. And another thing is security. But on the security thing, you know, that's been a real issue among these companies and making sure that the data you're putting in there on your tax filings is secure.
Yeah, so you need to be careful if you are using an online preparer what you say yes to, because there's a law about, you know, how they can use your data, and particularly Intuit is trying to expand its business to get people to say yes to allow Intuit to use their tax related data to pitch them, you know, products like credit cards and all that sort of stuff. So when you are filling out your taxes, you should pay attention to that if you're using an online system.
And when you're trying to just get by, your low middle income and, you know, Intuit or TurboTax is costing hundreds of dollars to be able to file your federal, and then you have to pay on top of state, that can really add up for a person.
Yeah, so I mean, it'll run you at least $100 if you're including your state return. And there's really no reason if you're low income to be paying for tax prep. So there is this program, which is if you can find your way through it and sort of run the gauntlet, it is free if you can find it. If you Google like IRS free file and then you'll find that webpage. Also, there's VITA sites, V-I-T-A, the Volunteer Tax Assistance that the IRS does. It's sort of federally sponsored. And if you Google that in like the county where you live, you can find someone to help you do your taxes for free if you're low income. So there really are options for people. But often they don't know about it. They just maybe see, you know, some tax prep place in the corner that's actually going to end up charging them, you know, $200 or $300.
Paul Keel is with us. He is a ProPublica reporter who's been looking into the IRS and tax prep companies and how they've administered the free file program over the years. Do you think our current tax filing system is working, or do you think it needs to change? What would you change about it? What could make it easier for you to file your taxes? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with ProPublica's Paul Keel here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and we're talking about the state of free tax preparation in our country and this investigation by ProPublica that revealed ways the tax prep industry suppressed the free file program. So nearly a year ago, the makers of TurboTax rolled out an ad campaign, and one of the ads is a parody of a 70s-style game show. The entire campaign uses only one word. Free! Free, free,
free! 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 That's right. TurboTax Free is free. Free, 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 free.
And Intuit Chief Marketing Officer commented on that campaign back in January. She said TurboTax Free was in its fifth year and taxpayers could file a simple return and feel confident that they would get all the money they deserve absolutely free. Do you think it should be free to file your taxes, or is it a service people should be paying for? Join in 800-642-1234. Paul Keel stays with us. He's a reporter at ProPublica. Paul, we just heard there one of the ads from last January. What have you seen out of TurboTax's marketing and PR strategy since your investigation started?
I don't think they've changed anything in terms of their advertising since it started. I mean, what we found in the story is that this goes back to the mid-2000s. And actually, it's this weird outgrowth of this government program we've been talking about, which was the Free File program. You know, that program was kind of supposed to work that these companies would provide free federal filing, and then they would charge people for a state return or other stuff related to tax filing, like, you know, audit protection or something like that. And then some companies found, well, maybe this might be not a bad way to draw customers in. And then it kind of leaked out into the commercial market. And then, you know, TurboTax launched what they call their free edition, which is free if you qualify for it. But the thing is that a lot of people end up finding out that they don't qualify. You know, one of the stories we did this year is that 1 year from the next, TurboTax changed it so that if you had interest on a student loan that was part of your tax situation, suddenly you were not free. You were thrown into what they call the deluxe edition. It's quite a jump from free to deluxe. And then you end up, you know, paying over $100 to do your taxes just because you had a little form that showed how much interest you'd paid on your student loan. So things can shift very much. And sort of the game is they want to draw customers in with this promise of free, but then they don't want to give free, you know, it's a business. They don't, you're not looking to give their product away. So then the game is, you know, how can we narrow the requirements so that some people don't actually qualify for free?
And then how do we keep these customers year after year as their situation changes?
Right. And we had, TurboTax Intuit employees basically saying that people have so much fear around taxes. It's such a drag that if you just make things somewhat easier for them, they'll kind of stick with you. So, you know, I'm sure everyone who here has used TurboTax, I've used TurboTax in the past, you'll start getting like sort of peppered with emails starting like late December, early January. And you're like, just do this. You know, we already have your name, we have your address, we have your name, you have your wife, you know, all sort of stuff. And just do this and it'll be easier. And that is enough for a lot of people just to stick with the company.
Let's go to Russ now, joining us from Stoughton. Hi, Russ.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to add, as far as people looking for savings on getting their taxes done for free, that the AARP organization does your federal and state taxes for free, regardless of age or income, or you don't even have to be an AARP member, and they're all over. They advertise, and you make yourself an appointment, and it takes maybe a half hour. These people are former CPAs or IRS people. And,
yeah, Russ, thank you so much because, you know, Paul, there are organizations out there that are helping people.
Yeah, like I said, there's this government program, VITA is the initials. You just Google that in the county where you live, you'll see places where you can go. You know, there can be a wait if you show up, you know, in April, but if you, you know, plan ahead and like I said, if you're low income, there's no reason why you should pay for anyone to do your taxes for you. There are options available, it's just people don't know about them.
Last month, there was this outside review of the IRS's relationship with the software industry, the tax software industry, and it found a lot of the same things that your work is finding, namely that there are a lot of problems there, but that review didn't conclude that any major changes needed to be made. So where does it stand?
Yeah, well, I mean, that review was the IRS contracted this company to do the review, and sort of the confines of what they were looking at was, you know, should we change this program, but kind of assuming that we need this program. So it wasn't really like a review of the entire situation. It was just somewhat narrow in its focus. You know, what would need to happen to change? And I guess to help people understand how things might look is talk to anyone from like a Western European country and they will say, here's how I filed my taxes this year. The government said, here's the income we have for you. Here's, you know, your name. I guess they might ask you how many kids you have. And then you say yes, and then you filed your taxes, and it takes about 5 minutes. So there's no reason why things here should be all that much more complicated than that. But we've been sort of hypnotized as a country to think that this has to be like, you know, something that people dread starting in January and, you know, put off until mid-April. So that is the sort of thing that is Intuit's nightmare scenario, that taxes in this country would be that simple. And it would take, you know, Congress passing a law and appropriating money for the IRS to clean itself up. I mean, we have an IRS that is like just, you know, trying to looking for pennies under the cushions, their budget has been slashed, particularly over the last 9 years. They have databases that date back to the 1960s. It's just really embarrassing, the state of the IRS. And that becomes part of the argument for why we can't trust the IRS to do something that works, because they're hapless, but they're hapless because they have no funds.
Talking with Paul Keel, a reporter at ProPublica covering business and consumer finance, he's been investigating the free file program and the agreement between the IRS and the tax filing software industry. Let's go to Lori now, joining us from Richmond, Illinois. Hi, Lori.
Hello. Hi. I'm a professional tax preparer, and I have to agree with your guests. There's no reason we shouldn't be providing free filing. And the reason most people go to a TurboTax or whatever is because they have to file their state return, and they end up having to pay for that, and they pay a lot of money for that. As a professional, I prepare taxes for people with more complicated situations, and I pay for my software, and I pay for the security of that software. That being said, most people's returns are so easy now, they really don't need that, and Intuit is ripping them off because they have to still prepare that state return.
Lori, thanks for the call. Paul, what do you make there of Lori saying it is actually the state return that is a bigger issue here?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting dynamic here. Like I said, in the early days, like back in the 2000s, that was sort of the profit center for these companies, the state return. And there was this kind of fork in the road. There were actually states that set up systems where people could file for free. One good example is Virginia. It was fairly successful. People were using it. But because the federal return, there was no really good way for people to file for free there, you would find yourself having to use something like TurboTax for your federal return. And then they're like, hey, just we'll do your state. We already have your information. Just do your state. And so that is obviously easier than saying no and then trying to find the state, revenue website so that you can do your state return. So there have been states that have been tried to set up systems where people would file for free online. But what they find is that people are kind of already in the TurboTax system. And so they're not going to jump out and do the state return.
As we wrap up here, Intuit is currently under investigation in several states, and there's an ongoing Inspector General investigation as well. Do you think anything will change in the future?
Well, I think the good thing is that there's a lot more, I think, understanding and education about this around. So at least it's something people are talking about. Like I said, there were sort of points in the past where there were sort of forks in the road and we went down this road, and it's sort of just kind of been an autopilot for a long time. So at the very least, it's something people are talking about. But like I said, it would take Congress doing something, and Congress is not great at doing things these days. So I don't know, maybe in the future.
Paul, thank you for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Paul Keel is a reporter at ProPublica covering business and consumer finance, and his current reporting focuses on the IRS and American Tax Administration. Just ahead, an economist joins us to share his perspective on the president's trade policies. He says they're working. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.